With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. In this episode, we are talking about the house that Jack built. I'm Jake Cunningham, and joining me to talk about Lars's latest, from Little White Lies and very much happy at home in Jack's house, it's Hannah Woodheads.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And from The Independent, and perhaps ready to raise this construction to the ground, Clarice Luffrey joins us as well.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm ready for destruction.
Excellent to hear. Hannah, you're very happy to be building this from the foundations. Love every brick in this wall.
I'm a Jack booster, I'm referring to as our collective. I've been waiting for this since Cannes, and saw it, ready to defend it, ready to go to bat for Lars.
And Clarice, you're happy, as I said, to bring it down brick by brick.
Yeah, I saw it more recently and went, meh. Yeah. So it's the opposite reaction in every single way.
Yeah, and perhaps perfect for this podcast, and maybe the worst reaction that Lars could hope for. I'm very much kind of middle ground. I'm amber on this film, and I'm ready to be persuaded by either of you. Normally on this show, we trying to champion the quality independent highlights of the week. So it's not often that I get to swing both ways on a film. So I'm excited to delve into this one. But first of all, before we talk about Jack, maybe let's talk about Lars von Trier and his career up to this point. Hannah, were you excited? Did you have high expectations? What did you like beforehand? What did you dislike about Lars?
I'm a von Trier apologist. Not for him as a person. I think, he has his own problems, but I liked Infomaniac. I'm one of those people. I like Melancholia. I've been following his career kind of since I got into films, and I was the second it was announced, I was like, this is up my alley. I'm a serial killer film enthusiast. I was gonna say serial killer enthusiast. No. And I love Matt Dillon. It's nice to see Matt Dillon getting a good role after all those years of terrible films, including Herbie Fully Loaded. This was like tailor-made for me, and I as a critic, you don't want to prejudge a film and go in like, I'm going to love this, but I did go in like, I'm going to love this, and I was happy to prove him right.
Okay, Clarice, yourself?
I think I went in with actual no real expectation because I am very mixed on Lars von Trier. I think there's this scale with him that when he's making films that are for us, I guess, and about humanity, even if they're, completely like nihilistic and depressing, I love that. But I think the more that he's realized that he's a provocateur, the more that he started making films for himself. And I just don't have time for a provocateur. And so I think whenever I can see him switching into that mode, that's when I just switch off emotionally and mentally, and I just go, right, on you go. Just do.
So you're perhaps more for a Melancholia.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I love Breaking the Waves and I love Melancholia. Those are my Lars von Trier movies.
Mm. So the titular Jack, Hannah, you've already mentioned, you're a serial killer fan. Sorry, no, not that. Serial killer movie
I've
fan.
I've got to make the distinction to the viewers and the listeners that I'm not a fan of serial killers.
Now, I think it's not a coincidence that serial killers or like murder shows, podcasts, they're huge at the moment, and maybe Lars is buying into a subject that he knows is going to instantly get people to grapple with. I'm thinking Making a Murderer, S-Town Serial, these types of programs across many areas of the media. Is it a worthwhile thing to explore? Is he making a new comment on the serial killer genre? Is it a genre?
I mean, the first thing that you have to kind of accept about this film is that it's not a film about serial killers. It's a film about filmmakers. And I had the pleasure of having a chat about this with Lars. And he said he's not a serial killer guy. He doesn't buy into this genre. He did call it a genre. He said that he wasn't really interested in it until he got married, and then he got married again, and his wives were interested in serial killers. And he said, and this is what I find interesting, doing this podcast with Carice, is that he said it's a female thing, like women are obsessed with serial killers. And I kind of dispute that. I think that if you look at the kind of breakdown of who's watching these programs, who's buying these books, it probably is more of an even split. But for me, I think it goes back even further than the kind of podcast boom that we've seen and the TV with David Fincher's Mindhunter, and that I think we're fascinated by the idea of something that is so different from our societal feelings around death and murder, and it's a safe kind of danger, a safe exploration, watching a film about it or reading a book or listening to a podcast. You can remove yourself from it. And I think maybe one of the things that for me this film brings to the surface is that you can't disassociate from it. It is so kind of brutal, and you can't switch off. You've been forced the whole time to really get into it. There's no cutaway from the violence in this. It is like sit there and look at it. It's kind of Clockwork Orange style, like pin your eyes open violence.
Yeah. And it's almost using that violence and the topic as an access point to talk about other things as well. I mean, you mentioned this isn't a film about serial killers, it's a film about filmmakers. And I was maybe going to go into that a bit later, trying to separate the plot of the film.
And
But I think that's the conversation that everyone's having about this film, that Jack has almost become a sidelined character, and everyone is talking about Lars von Trier as the main character of this film. Clarice, I know that for you is not something that really should have happened.
Yeah, I think, because I have to admit, I'm also kind of what are we calling it? A serial killer, not enthusiast.
Fan's worse.
Yeah, I'll just be straight with it. I'm quite a morbid person. Yeah. I'm a very morbid person, and so I think films and, you know, films about serial killers are always quite attractive. I really loved My Friend Dahmer, which was from earlier this year, yes.
Yeah.
Time is passing so quickly. and so I think part of that disappointment almost was that you go into a film about a serial killer and then you're like, this is not about a serial killer at all. I think the only reason that the character is a serial killer, that he's made that decision, is because he's very interested in the idea of predator and prey, because we saw that in Nymphomaniac with that idea of the jaguar, and that, I don't know what it had in its mouth, but you see that recurring image of the jaguar with the prey in its mouth. And so here he's thinking, right, what is the human equivalent of the jaguar in society? And it's a serial killer, I guess. So, you know, that's the most extreme version of it. And so I don't even know if Lars von Trier is aware of the, like, all these murder podcasts. I don't really know how in tune he is with pop culture. I imagine he just sort of, I don't know, sits in a hut somewhere and just comes up with these ideas. So I think it is, as a film culturally, it's completely detached from everything that's going on at the moment. I think it's very much its own little thing.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like maybe he's, after Nymphomaniac, he's kind of heightened the level of depravity just to get people talking about it, right? So Nymphomaniac, for me, which I actually really liked, it felt like Lars von Trier saying, I will make the film that people exactly expect me to make.
Oh, yeah. Big time. I mean, the advertising campaign, you know, especially coming off the back of his persona non grata status, Nymphomaniac was kind of him like going, you want Lars von Trier? I'll give you Lars von Trier. Mm. And I think this film's like feels much less like him trying to be provocative than Nymphomaniac did to me.
Oh, I don't...
Right, yeah. Yeah. I feel like you haven't had enough.
Yeah, it's him going the next step, being like, oh, you thought you were upset by that.
He's Gaspar Knowing.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm going to, like, cast myself. Because I guess we've not said this explicitly, but, you know, Lars von Trier is Jack. They are interchangeable. And so I think that for him is the ultimate provocation, is to go, yeah, I'm a cinematic serial killer. I'm going to come and get you. So I think, yeah, for me, this film is just the natural progression. It's step two to Nymphomaniac. I don't know what step three is. I'm kind of scared of step three. For me, I think on-screen violence is always a metaphor. So I don't think I've ever really been in a position where I've seen a film and I've gone, it's too violent. I don't like it. I think for me, when I find violence upsetting, it's what it represents. It's when the thing that the violence represents is something horrifying or something really, I don't know, disturbing.
I'd like to talk about how the violence is represented in the film, because I think what is very interesting, and going back to the serial killers programming that we've already talked about, is there are acts that Jack performs in this that made me think of the show Hannibal and the way that that show treats the kind of desecration of body parts and the destruction and consumption of them is extremely kind of fetishized and pornographic in a way. And the way that Jack deals with stuff like that is not at all in that way. I don't think Lars is saying, look how cool this act is. I don't think he, like, Jack is not a cool guy. Whereas in so many other serial killer programs or films, the serial killer is often quite a slick operator.
Yeah, Mads Mikkelsen is extremely cool.
Yeah.
But no, I agree completely. I think that that's the thing that I like about, well, one of the things, obviously. Lars knows that Jack is a loser. You know, there's kind of no mistake about that. The first time we see him, he's, you know, in this car with this, these sort of Jeffrey Dahmer glasses and this like beige raincoat on, and Uma Thurman like totally just takes him for a ride. She's just like, you are a sad little man, and I am gonna do what I want. I'm gonna make you take me to the mechanic. She, you know, he's very downtrodden, and for me his violence is kind of like a reaction to how emasculated he feels. And it was hard for me to think that it was inherently misogynistic watching this, which is one of the kind of overarching critiques, because I think that Lars is very acutely aware that this isn't acceptable. This isn't normal. This isn't right. And I guess it's the way we would diverge here is this metaphor like worthwhile? This kind of like, you know, this path he's taking us down? Because it's one thing to say, oh, you know, men shouldn't kill women, but What's Lars getting at here? You can't just show it and then, you know, infer from that. Am I making sense?
No, I agree. And I'm never quite sure whether we should put the label, oh, Lars von Trier is misogynistic. I always kind of struggle with that, because he obviously is so horrified by the world that I think the treatment of women is going to be part of that. And I think it's just almost part of his worldview of everything's terrible, women are awful, but also women are terribly treated. And I think it's hard, because that means sometimes the films come across with a sort of malice towards women. And maybe there even is a malice towards women in his films, but I don't know if it comes from a strict, like, I dislike women. I think it comes from a, I hate the world and women are part of the world, and so I hate women too. So I really struggle with that question when people ask, are his films misogynistic? I just, I don't know. I feel like I don't really have an answer.
I think
it's not helpful.
Yeah,
but
that's the case, I think, especially with this film. You know, there were two prominent female, well, maybe three, maybe four prominent female characters. In these, you know, Jack has these, he, is it, how many incidents? Six?
There are five incidents that frame the film.
And then the prologue.
And then epilogue.
Epilogue, sorry. Yeah. No prologue.
And these incidents in three cases are also the character names of the women involved.
Yeah. So not all the women in this film get a name, which again, I think a lot of people struggle with. The idea that this is like just kind of faceless violence against women, which, yeah, I totally agree, you know. I've read a couple of criticisms that sort of feel that to him all women are in this film is objects. And I don't think it's to Lars. I think it's to Jack But then if you're saying, well, Jack is Lars, then it's, you know, where does the film begin and the film end and Lars begin, you know?
Yeah, I think, because that's where my big issue with the film comes in, is that I'm sitting here, you know, still unsure whether I think Lars von Trier is misogynistic, and he's come in and made this film that's like, I'm such a misogynist. Oh, God, you guys all hate me.
Yeah.
Don't you just hate me? And I'm so terrible to women. And so to watch this entire sort of, I think there's something very self-flagellating about the film. And that is my problem with it, because he's decided that we all despise him. And so he's going to make us watch this movie about him being such an evil. Because there's, hopefully it's not too much of a spoiler, but the film is this conversation between Jack and this Verge character who is sort of an otherworldly, maybe transporting him to an underworld kind of place individual. And at the beginning, this character goes, Jack, I don't care what you tell me. Nothing, you know, I've heard it all before. Nothing's going to move me or scare me. And then by the end of the film, he's like, you're so evil. Yeah. You are Satan. And so I think when you watch that film with in mind the idea that Jack is Lars von Trier, it's basically Lars von Trier going, oh, I'm so evil. Oh, I'm just so
evil.
Way,
it's just like him giving a nice little pat on the back for himself. Like, yeah. I lived up to it, didn't I? It made me think of in Nocturnal Animals when there's a book within a book and the book is received so well and so dramatically. And then you remember that Tom Ford wrote that book within the book. And so he's written his own critical reception into the film.
It's exactly that. It's like that awkward thing when a filmmaker makes an assumption about you, and if they don't live up to that assumption, then you're just sitting there going, what is this?
Yeah.
Like, what? Why are you making me go through this journey with you that I didn't want to go on in the first place?
Bruno Ganz is like the unsung hero of this film. He has this very flat German voice, and he's just like, oh, Jack, you really are an evil man. And it's so beautiful, because I think you can totally read it, like Carissa said, is this kind of like him getting progressively more disgusted. And at the end, he kind of says something like, you really are a sick man or something. But to me, it sounded so sarcastic and so, oh, you think you're something, don't you? You really think you're something. I don't want to spoil it, but the epilogue is so like bitingly sarcastic to me that it became increasingly obvious that Jack is, I think I said this in my review, he's like a sad, strange little man. And I'm quoting Toy Story now. He's a sad, strange little man and he has my pity. Because he does something that is such a perfect, I can't think of a better way to illustrate male hubris than the way this film ends. It is such a kind of biting, like, this is a man who will literally think so much of himself. He will do the ultimate kind of like something you would really, really have to have a total disconnection between who you are and what reality is to do. And I think maybe that's why I really connected to this film, is that I think it's Lars saying, yeah, I'm a bit of a bastard and I don't really know what to do about it. But again, if you're kind of sick of that and sick of Lars as an entity, the Lars von Trier show, which is what this film could have been subtitled, fair enough, you know, totally fair. I can understand the fatigue. He is an exhausting filmmaker.
Yeah.
You know, that he is constantly not only putting his audiences through a film, but through himself. And when you look at there's a bit in this film, and I'm sure that we can talk about this because everyone has talked about it, where he puts his own films in the film.
Yeah.
And he does a lot, there's a lot of montage, a lot of quick cut to cultural images and cultural iconography, because as I've already said, it's a film about filmmaking, it's a film about art, it's a film about the film as an object. And it's so kind of self-aware in that way. I can totally understand why people would be like, I just want Lars to make a film that is a film and a story and not a film that is actually something else.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, I think something that we briefly mentioned about Nymphomaniac, since Melancholia, he is very much more openly opened up a dialogue with audiences within the film. So in Nymphomaniac, you've got the Stellan Skarsgård character who, in that film, he's willing to listen. He is presented at the start of it as quite an open character who at times is sympathetic, but maybe come the end of it will turn on Lars. And I think that's him viewing us, the audience or critics, that we might be open to something, but eventually we will savage it. Whereas in House That Jack Built, the audience surrogate is this Verge who's having that dialogue with Lars. But here he has made the audience someone who's already giving Lars passage to hell. So it's like, in this film, he has already decided what the reaction is. He's already said the audience is going to want to drag me down for this.
Mm. And it's also, you know, you can make a film saying, I'm a very, very bad man. Well, there's nothing I can do about it. Because I think, you know, to fit this film into, you know, his entire body of filmmaking, I think his whole opinion of the world is very, you know, it's very clearly like, it's terrible, we can't fix it, you know, like Melancholia, let's just crash a planet into it, it's just awful, I don't want to deal with it. And so I think maybe I'm viewing the film through that lens, but the ending for me was very much, I'm a terrible man, there's nothing I can do about it, guess I'm just going to... It's like when, like, a boyfriend will break up with somebody by saying, I'm just so messed up, you know? I'm just such a messed up guy, and, like, you deserve better than me. I think that is the film for me. It's that boyfriend giving that whole speech, and then they walk off, and you go, well, are you going to do anything about it? That makes sense.
Particularly when I think something like Melancholia does actually have seem to have real characters in it, like real people who you do feel sad for the end of the world happening to them. Whereas
I think there's one character in this film that feels like a real character, and it's the character that Rory Keogh plays. She's only referred to as Simple because that she does. I'm sure she has a real name in the film, and I'm just forgetting what it is because I think Jack, when he's introducing her, says, she was called Simple, but I called her Simple.
Perhaps the fact that the credits of the film and viewing Jack / Lars's film that she's
but and I think it's a credit to Riley Keough. I mean, I think she's only in it for like what 10 minutes, maybe 10 minutes tops. I mean, she's great in everything. She's great. This could be the Riley Keough podcast if I had my way.
I concur.
There's one guy we need to talk about, and it's Matt Dillon, number one fan club member over there, Hannah.
He looks like Sam the Eagle from Sesame Street, and I love it. Go and Google Sam the Eagle, you'll see what I mean.
I'm thinking it right now.
Yeah.
Eyebrows. It's the eyebrows.
Yeah. It's slowly coming together. Yeah.
When we edit this together on video,
have a little.
Can we get side by side on the two?
Can they come in from opposite directions and just meet in the middle and then fuse into
over
one?
The credits, yeah. In fact.
And
over
the credits. Then when the transition happens, can we have the X Files music?
Production values through the roof.
But yeah, Matt Dillon's great. You mentioned My Friend Dharma already. I think, like, he's dressed up that way. He's got the glasses, the trench coat is... He's got the transparent trench coat from American Psycho. He's got all these...
He has a lot of, like, looks in this... He is serving looks. Yeah. He goes through a lot of... I mean, this is set over 20 years, so he's obviously going to go through, like, some transitions, I guess, in that period. But, yeah, when we start out, he's very much at the beginning of his career. Oh, horrible word. He's on the beginning of his journey to the ultimate kind of the house that he will build. He looks kind of like, you know, like a bank account, you know, like a tax inspector or something. He's very, like, you know, you wouldn't think, look at him twice. But then we see him later on, and when he's with Riley Keough, for example, he's affected this limp. Which serial killer was it who did this?
Dennis Nielsen, is that it?
It might be Dennis Nielsen. He affected a limp to convince women that he was not a threat to them, basically, which is kind of what Jack does in this section. He's affected a limp, and he looks quite handsome, I think, actually. He's got, you know, kind of like leather jacket and, you know, his very much reminiscent of what he used to look like in the kind of 80s, you know, like a heartthrob, I guess. And it's interesting to me the transformation we see him undergo from how he looks at the beginning to how he looks by the end of the film.
Yeah. Well, I think there's definitely that change in his physical demeanour. But I think in the performance, that really develops across his kind of levels of satisfaction or comfort within this realm of becoming a killer. At the start of the film, he's quite jittery. He's not got much confidence. He's kind of sits back in himself a lot. But by the time we get to Simple's interaction, he's got a lot more bravado about him.
Yeah, he goes kind of from a Jeffrey Dahmer to a Richard Ramirez on the
scale
of serial killers. That's what it is. Which I guess, I don't know, does that bring it back to the Lars von Trier thing? Is that, you know, it's Lars von Trier coming to the acceptance of like, yeah, I'm bad. I'm sorry, I'll keep coming back to this. It's just going to keep coming back to this point of him going, yeah, I'm bad.
There's when I spoke to Lars about the film, I asked him about OCD, because Lars has OCD and Jack has OCD. And there's a whole segment dedicated to him, a murder, which kind of is hampered by his OCD, shall we say, and his compulsions. And as the film goes on, we see the OCD becoming less of an issue to Jack because he tempers it by focusing on something else, which is killing people. And I talked to Lars about this and I said, you know, it's interesting to me that you would choose to... in fact, there's a line in the film, how funny, a killer with OCD. And Lars said, if we are to take the metaphor that this is about filmmaking, that for him, filmmaking is his murder. He said that making films for him helps his OCD. And as we noticed in the film, like the more Lars kills, the more Lars kills, the more Jack kills, the better he becomes at managing his OCD. I think for Lars, the more films he makes, the better he feels about his OCD.
One thing that ultimately was quite damning, maybe for me, by the end of it, was that actually I wasn't that shocked by it all.
I agree.
It was almost given like with that makes the shock even. Is that more shocked that I'm not as shocked? Like, because it's been spoken about in such a way. I was expecting to come out, I don't know, like being sick or something because of what I've seen. But actually, I've maybe found other works of his more shocking than this.
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that because I just wasn't. I felt like I wasn't fazed by it, and I started to worry. I was thinking, am I turning into a psychopath because I'm watching this entire film, and watching all these acts of violence and going, okay, what's next?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I guess for me, you know, film on screen violence, it has to do with the emotions behind it. And I think because all of this is so, I guess, so metaphorical and so clinical and so, you know, because it is so much about Lars von Trier, it's not about murder, it's not about the victims. I think because the victims are just, I don't know, they're just props.
Yeah.
When they die, maybe you just...
They are props to him,
yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
Perhaps it goes back to they're not really being characters because we feel pain on screen so much more when we know who it's happening
exactly,
to.
Exactly, yeah. Mm. And I think this year as well, like, there have been some extremely violent films that have come out that maybe have affected people. I mean, I was more shocked watching kind of Revenge, the Coralie Fargate movie, than I was watching this. I don't know if it is that I've come to expect it from Lars von Trier now, so there's kind of nothing he can do to shock me. But also, yeah, I think you don't really care because you don't have time to care. There's, you know, it's just, it's easier to disassociate yourself from the violence that's happening when you don't know who it's happening to.
Yeah.
And that's true in society as well, I think. Mm. Yes, right. It all comes back to that.
So where do we think this one lands in the oeuvre of Lars? Is it one that we'll be revisiting compared to others?
I think we will have to revisit it because this is, in a way, his ultimate statement, for good or bad. I think for me, it's a film I don't have any interest in returning to because, you know, he gave me the message, I've got it, you know, I've understood, and now I can move on with my life. So I don't know if it's going to, because, you know, every single one of his films has been so controversial. I think this one being controversial isn't going to make any difference to its legacy. Mm. So I'm not so sure. I think there will be some necessary part of it that we will have to keep talking about you know, every time he releases a new film after this, we'll have to keep referring back to, right, what in this film, you know, sort of relates back to what he made next, I guess, if that makes sense.
It's becoming this odd Marvel cinematic universe where all of everything that came before it is now going to play into everything after
exactly.
it. And how much, like, as, is that just going to make his audiences get smaller and smaller whilst you've got to been paying
yeah.
attention to
and
the last 20
years?
Does,
if he does anything that comes across as misogynistic in his future films, then everyone's going to look back at this and be like, well, what was the point of this film then?
If you, if you're saying it's bad, what's going on here, yeah. Lars? Yeah, I think it's funny. The Image book is out now, I guess, as well. And people have said that feels like the culmination of, like, Godard's career. And it's him saying, like, this is it. And that's what The House That Jack Built feels like. I think, was it Robbie Collin that called... it was either Robbie Collin or David Ehrlich that said it feels like a suicide note, which is, like, a really dark thing to say. But I kind of get where they're coming from. It feels like a film that you would make right at the end of your career. And as far as I know, Lars is still... He's making another film now. He has no intentions of stopping making films. And something that I'm still wrestling with this film, as much as I love it, is kind of what is the point here to, you know, what's the point Lars is making? Is it just that life is pain and that's it? Because maybe it is. And if that's what he's getting at, then fair play. You know,
it's that he's a naughty boy. That's the point of the film.
He's saying very much so come the end of the film, that the real house that Jack built was the friends we made along the way.
Oh, yeah. And they were used to build the house.
Yeah. And I think that's all we've really got time to talk about. But if you want to fill in the gaps in your Lars von Trier back catalogue and really catch up with the Lars Cinematic Universe, you can do so on Curzon Home Cinema. And on there, we've got Breaking the Waves, Dancer in the Dark, Dogville, Antichrist, Melancholia, Nymphomaniacs Volume 1 and 2, both the regular and Edgelord's cut. And we've also got The House That Jack Built too. And you can, they're all up there on Home Cinema for your viewing pleasure.
Why not do an all-night marathon?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
If anything needs to ram home, the life is pain.
The worst time of your life.
Come round my house, we'll do it.
I watched all the Harry Potters and I thought that was hard. Doing all the Lars von Trier.
I'm sure Lars would be happy to be up there in the level of pain threshold as the Harry Potter films.
You can have that, Lars.
Yeah. All right. And if you've got any thoughts on The House That Jack Built, then do let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com. We'll save those up for a future show. Or you can always tweet us at Curzon Cinemas as well. If this is your first time listening to the show, then please do subscribe. You can do that at iTunes, on Acast, we're on Spotify now too. And when you're there, you can leave us a review and comment as well. Coming soon on the podcast, we'll be looking at some of our highlights of the year. And we'll be talking to Mark Gatiss all about 10-time BIFFA award winner, The Favourite. And that's about it. So I must say thank you to Clarice and Hannah for coming in to
thank you
share
for
their pain with us. It's been fun.
I've had fun,
yeah.
You know. Exercise some demons.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. And you can keep up with everyone here on Twitter. I'm at Jake H. Cunningham. Clarice, you are?
Oh, I'm at Clarice Liu, which I'm not going to spell, but look at surrounding text next to this podcast.
And Hannah?
I'm Good Job Liz, which is another Lars von Trier reference. So if you know it, tweet me.
Brilliant. Thanks so much for joining us. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods
for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.